Due to an area-wide outage of the main fiber channel upon which White Rose depends for recording shows, this show was recorded on a laptop computer using a modem. As a result, there are several sections missing due to having to reconnect the modem several times during the show. Our sincere apologies, and we will attempt to restore the level of service you expect in the immediate future.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And top of the morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be. Greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on radio stations all across the United States on the Sirius satellite radio system and beaming around the planet. On White Rose Society, RadioPower.org, Live 365, American FM's Live 365. Welcome back to our program. And, of course, on CRN Digital, which right now I think is our only web stream. We're still trying to connect to the other one. Ben, our stream provider, is having an outage. They're apparently in the central part of the United States, there's a crash that has happened on the Internet. Life goes on. Our quote for the day from President Dwight D. Eisenhower, November 8th, 1954. Dwight D. Eisenhower, our quote for the day, should any political party, said Eisenhower, attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, and eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you would not hear of that party again in our political history. He went on to say that, you know, keep in mind, our president is a Texas oil multimillionaire, right? Although his companies all would have failed. They were all failing, but they got bailed out by folks like Osama bin Laden's half-brother, Salman bin Laden, and other good friends of the Bush family. So anyhow, Eisenhower went on to say, there is a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things. Among them are a few other Texas oil millionaires and an occasional politician or businessman from other areas. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Yes, Dwight D. Eisenhower speaking in 1954 about George W. Bush, who at that point in time must have been, what, about 9 years old? But little did he know. In fact, George W., when he ran for Congress unsuccessfully in Texas, but another marvelous failure. This was all pre-Karl Rove. When George W. ran for Congress back in the late 70s, early 80s in Texas, his main platform was the need to convert Social Security from a program that is guaranteed for everybody for all time into a program where basically big corporations run it and you give them their money and they give you whatever they feel like, you know, basically privatizing Social Security. That was his agenda. And guess what? With his privatizing Social Security agenda, he lost. What a surprise. And frankly, let's hope that Dwight D. Eisenhower's words are prophetic. That any politician, any political party that thinks that it can mess with Social Security, that it can ruin Social Security, that it can cut unemployment compensation, as this administration did 3 years ago, is doomed to the trash bin of history. The Republicans try this about every 50, 60 years. In this case, it's been, what, about 70 years? I mean, the last time they pulled all this stuff out of the hat was the 1920s. Borrow money, let the corporations accumulate massive power and wealth, deregulate everything in sight. And what happened? Predictably, the Great Depression. It crashed. It all fell in on itself, as you would expect. 1-866-889-8899. for our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, our website, if you'd like to drop in and say hi. Live chat, click live chat, it'll get you there. Yesterday, we heard about the United Airlines pension case. A few bloggers have been weighing in on this. Atrios at blogspot.com points out, the story amazingly gets worse. In fact, amazingly, it really and truly gets worse. While a bankruptcy bill was steamrolling through Congress, Dick Durbin offered an amendment that would have protected employees and retirees from the common corporate practice of discharging liability for pension plans. Discharging liability is corporate speak for, we ain't going to pay you. We're going to take the money and give it to our CEO and our senior executives, or we will distribute it as profit to our stockholders so that our stockholders who earn their livings by sitting on their butt around the pool and only paying 15% maximum income tax, thanks to George W. Bush's Bush Jr.'s last tax cut, so that those folks will get the money, but you just worked for us. You don't get the money. Come on. Dick Durbin offered an amendment that would have protected employees and retirees from the common corporate practice of discharging liabilities for retirement plans, retained earnings, and matching funds when businesses file Chapter 11. This is pretty incredible. I mean, this is truly mind-boggling, actually, when you put it in context. Here we have bankruptcy legislation, a bankruptcy bill, which in essence said, in the bankruptcy legislation, the whole point of the bankruptcy legislation was basically to say, if a person has some assets, then those assets should go to whomever they promised them to. You shouldn't be able to walk away from a bankruptcy and still have anything. You shouldn't be able to walk away and have your home. You shouldn't be able to walk away, nothing. You know, we're going to strip them naked. You know the old cartoons from the 20s, from the 30s and 40s of the guy who wears a barrel? They should bring that cartoon character back. Because here we are. So anyhow, they said, you know, if you're a person and you made a promise to a credit card company or a bank, you have to pay that off. Even if you found yourself in a terrible hole because your spouse died or divorced you, even if you find yourself in a terrible hole because, you know, cancer got you or a member of your family, even if you find yourself in a terrible hole because the medical bills have wiped you out, even if you find yourself in a terrible hole because your insurance company is not paying all of your bills, even if you have insurance. Keep in mind, a quarter of all bankruptcies last year were people who were wiped out by medical bills who had health insurance. But the health insurance companies, with all their weasel words and all their this exemption and that exemption and 50% of this and 80% of that, and is that a qualified expense? And maybe you're out of the system and blah, 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 blah. In fact, a quarter of all the people who reached that absolute desperate point where they were willing to blow up their credit for the rest of their lives, certainly for, it used to be 7 years. Now the computers are a little better. That desperate quarter of all people who declared bankruptcy, fully insured with health insurance and yet still wiped out by medical bills. The other half, the other quarter of the half, wiped out by the folks who were wiped out because who had medical expenses but didn't have health insurance. So half of all bankruptcies caused by people who got sick. People who got sick. Pretty amazing, eh? Once again, our quote for the day from Dwight D. Eisenhower: should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, and eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you would not hear of that party again in our political history. There's a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things. Among them are a few Texas oil millionaires and an occasional politician or businessman from other areas. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Dwight D. Eisenhower, November 8th, 1954. So anyhow, Dick Durbin tried to amend the bankruptcy bill when it was going through Congress to say that, okay, if you're going to make it harder for individuals to declare bankruptcy, let's make it harder for corporations to declare bankruptcy. Or if they do succeed and declare bankruptcy, let's prevent them from screwing their employees. Let them screw their stockholders instead. After all, those are the people, when they bought the stock, who knew they were taking a risk. The employees thought they were being promised something. There's this social contract we have. You go in to buy stock, you go to a stockbroker, and they, the first thing they do is they sit you down and they say, how much risk do you want to take? If you want a lot of risk, we'll put you in stock. If you don't want a lot of risk, we'll buy bonds. How much risk would you like? If you buy stock, you have to be informed of the fact that you could lose everything. The law requires it. Common sense requires it. Good ethics requires it. So, who do we protect? Those people who went into the investment knowing that there was a risk? Or the employees who, when they were hired, were told, hey, if you work here for 20 years, we promise you that for the rest of your life, you'll get X. You'll get $1,500 a month. You'll get $5,000 a month, whatever it may be. $25,000 a year. You'll get 70% of your salary. You'll get 50%. We promise you. Here, in writing. The employees, when they took the job with United Airlines, were not given a piece of paper that says, we're offering you this pension, but by the way, we may take it back. Stockholders were told that. Employees were not. This is obscene. Obscene. And, of course, it's standard operating practice for the Republicans and the conservative Democrats. Those few Democrats, well, there's probably more than a few, I guess, who consider the members of the Democratic Leadership Council, who consider themselves cons. Uh-huh. The old camera trick. Heidi just walking through. The debts and liabilities of United pensioners are going to be left to the taxpayers now through the Federal Pension Guarantee Corporation, which itself is facing bankruptcy. I mean, the story gets weirder and weirder. This is just absolutely wrong. And not only that, this is nothing new. This started, actually, with the United Mine Workers taking on the mining companies in West Virginia a decade or more ago, and those companies then saying, hey, pensions? And declaring and using bankruptcy to get out of paying pensions. This is nothing new. This is an old trick. It's been done for a long time. Long time. And a spreading blitz from, you know, a couple of years ago, the United Mine Workers, they were taking on Horizon Natural Resources Coal Company. Horizon, the fourth largest coal producer in the United States, 27 surface mines, 15 underground in central Appalachia. The UMW filed a lawsuit against them. They had a contract. The company filed for bankruptcy. Addington Enterprises filed for bankruptcy in February 2002. 3 months later, it emerged as Verizon, which in turn filed for bankruptcy in November 2003 and demanded that 2,300 retirees pay more for health care and began to default on their pensions. The UMW has long provided health care for its members, but this wipes out. It's about union busting. Now they're going to say, well, yeah, your new union negotiated something for you, but they don't have all that much power. This is ultimately about who's in charge here. Who has the power in America? Is it we the people? Or is it just a corporate elite, a corporate few, who can walk away with their millions intact and say to the workers, hey, tough luck, good luck, see you later. It's a tragedy. It's a crime. Tom Hartman with you, 20 minutes past the hour. Blogosphere, or the blogosphere, right. Or whatever you call it. Yeah.
Well, here's my story for you today, Tom. I am a U.S. Airways pilot, and on March the
3rd. So you have a unique insight into all of this.
Yes, I do, because what no one is saying right now is, or what no one seems to remember, is that on March 31st, 2003, the U.S. Airways pilot's pension plan was terminated by the company, which was then in bankruptcy.
They did the same thing that United is doing, in other words.
They did the same thing to the pilots only. Then in 2004, the other unionized employees at U.S. Airways had their pensions terminated by the company, which was in bankruptcy for a second time.
Yeah.
Now, here's the kicker. The the guy that was the CEO of U.S. Airways in 2003, during that first bankruptcy, and who presided over the termination of my pension and the other U.S. Airways pilots' pensions, was named Dave Siegel.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Post, in an article in 2004, reported that Dave Siegel's 2003 compensation package before he left U.S. Airways was over $10 million.
Now, what can anybody do that's worth $10 million?
Well, he...
Unless they're part of the mob. I mean, this is like... Exactly. These big corporations are being run like organized crime.
Exactly. And now we have no pensions. Our pensions will be paid by the PGBC, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Which itself is shaky.
Which is very shaky. I don't have the numbers in front of me, Tom. I used to. Let it suffice to say that the day Bill Clinton left office, the PBGC was strongly in the black.
Yeah.
And I know it's very, very deep in the red. The head of the PBGC was on NBC News last night and was weeping and wailing about the financial straits of the PBGC, especially as it relates to this dumping of the United Pensions.
Right. They're trying to get the per employee, I think it's $30 a year right now, that corporations with pension programs, defined benefit pension programs, have to pay into the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Basically, it's an insurance premium.
Right. And they're trying to get that raised because they're a couple hundred million dollars, billion dollars in debt.
Yeah. I think it's closer to seven, but...
$700 billion?
No.
$7 billion.
$7 billion. But okay. Don't quote me on that.
My recollection was 200 and something, but dig it out of the paper.
Yeah, it's too many zeros for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to remind the listeners that this is nothing new. United terminating the pension is nothing new. It happened at U.S. Airways. It happened at Bethlehem Steel, I believe it was.
Yeah. And before that, it happened at Horizon Coal Mills coal mines.
And look at where GM is sitting right now.
And it happened at Polaroid as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So just to put it in perspective, I heard on the news last night that they were saying the average United employee would be getting a retirement somewhat maybe 25% less than what they were counting on. My retirement under PBGC will be about one-third of what I was counting on the defined benefit.
Yeah, what we're seeing here is a radical realignment, Mac, of the social contract. This is exactly what the conservatives are all about. Ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on the working people and in particular on organized labor, they want to redefine the social contract in the United States, and they're doing it. They're succeeding.
That's right.
And we have to wake up and we have to throw off this oppression. This is just absolutely wrong. 29 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
There it is. For a minute there, I thought we'd lost our bumper music. It's been a weird computer day. Welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Now, the Delay Political Death Watch.
Yes, the Delay Political Death Watch moves on. When it comes to the Mariana Islands, House Majority Leader Tom DeLay didn't...
Republicans were saying cradle to the grave security. This was their thing. It's cradle to the grave security.
The Republicans were advocating that or opposed to that?
Oh, opposed to that.
Yeah.
That's so...
Yeah, that was in fact, worse. That's communism. That was their, in their minds. I mean, that was their buzz phrase. Yeah, because I remember that phrase from when I was a kid. But, you know, I thought it was something that the Republicans used to beat up on the Democrats and said that this is what socialist, you know, the Democrats are all about.
There was a movie with Merv Griffin. It was not Merv Griffin. It was Andy Griffin. And it was Face in the Crowd, where he played a real bad guy. You got to look at that one.
Uh-huh.
And he was like a Arthur Godfrey type folksy guy,
right?
Who then became real prominent, and they put him in advertising, and then they got a right-wing guy that he backed, and he molded him, you know.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things is they had these little Cracker Barrel meetings, you know, real folksy, and he came in with this right-wing candidate and said, well, we've been out duck hunting, and he says, what do you think about Social Security? He says, well, Daniel Boone didn't go into the forest looking for Social Security.
Yeah.
So this has been a theme throughout the Republicans ever since they've had it. They just do not want working people to have a retirement.
Yeah, and the bottom line is that Daniel Boone actually did go into the forest looking for Social Security. What everybody is doing throughout their lifetime is trying to find security. Abe Maslow with his hierarchy of human needs, I mean, security is right there at the bottom. It's one of the very, security and safety are the first two things that we seek. And then we seek companionship and enlightenment and whatnot, you know, but security is absolutely critical.
Absolutely. You're correct. You had a great show, and I learned a lot from listening to you.
Great. Thank you, Richard, and I appreciate you calling in and listening on an ongoing basis. Tom DeLay, this morning, the Washington Post editorial page says, no problem with Representative Melissa Hart, the congresswoman from Pennsylvania, the Republican from Pennsylvania, leading up the ethics investigation of Tom DeLay. Now, get this. Now, the two of the five Republicans on the ethics committee that will investigate Tom DeLay have recused themselves because they both actually donated money to Tom DeLay's legal defense fund. The other three Republicans on the committee, what about them? Well, they all received money from him, and it goes even farther. Congressional Quarterly reports this morning, this from the thinkprogress.org blog, when House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, Republican from Texas, acknowledges the applause of 900 conservatives gathered in his honor tonight. By the way, that's a $250 a plate dinner. And they say all the money is going to pay for the plate, for the food. You want to buy a bridge? Anyhow, the Congressional Quarterly, when Tom DeLay gets together to have all these folks applaud him tonight, the House Ethics Committee may be represented, at least in spirit. Representative Melissa A. Hart of Pennsylvania is among about 30 House Republicans who have purchased either $250 tickets or $2,000 tables to the American Conservative Union dinner, the group's executive director, Richard Lesner, said Tuesday. Hart also has close ties to DeLay's favorite lobbyist, Jack Abramoff. And I'm telling you, the White House, the Bush White House, has close ties to Jack Abramoff as well. And that's why nobody wants this thing, nobody on the con side. And, of course, the cons control the House and Senate. None of these Republicans want these things opened up because it's going to reach all the way to George W. Bush. See no evil, hear no evil. When House Majority Leader Tom DeLay helped kill a congressional fact-finding trip to the Northern Mariana Islands, it seemed that he was obviously was not interested in the harsh reality of life on the islands. The Houston Press in 1999 confirmed that. Originally visiting Texas, quote, as part of a campaign to rally for legislation intended to end the dangerous job conditions and substandard wages for the largely Asian female workforce in the Marianas, Carmen Sita Abad soon found herself lucky enough to have a scheduled appointment with Tom DeLay's Stafford office. So Abad, a woman who had spent 6 years in the brutal conditions of a Saipan sweatshop, Saipan is another name for the Mariana Islands, or it's one of them, before becoming an activist herself, arrived at Tom DeLay's office with two human rights activists and a University of Houston history professor. They thought, hey, we have an appointment with Tom DeLay. We're going to be able to educate him about this. After all, he's going over there. He's talking about these issues. Should there be a minimum wage in Saipan? But when they got there, the delegation was told that the meeting had been canceled. They were told their ground had, they tried to hold their ground, but suddenly two plainclothes officers arrived asking to see their driver's licenses, alleging that they had refused to leave the office. Only problem was, it seems no one ever asked them to leave the office. Didn't matter, though. After threatening to arrest them if they didn't leave, the cops escorted them to the parking lot and copied down their driver's license numbers. DeLay's office maintained not only that the visitors were belligerent, but also that the meeting had been canceled. On the other hand, Abad and her group claimed that the message which had supposedly been left wasn't even with someone involved with the Saipan campaign. However, DeLay's office dismissed the incident as a public relations gimmick. And under instructions from the Washington office, had chosen not to meet with what they called a, surprise, surprise, liberal radical group, not a legitimate organization. How do you get this? When the supporters of Abbott asked for an apology for the treatment she'd received, Tom DeLay's camp instead said they should be giving an apology to the people of the 22nd District of Texas for the loss of time of the office staff who could have been working on substantive issues. Right. So then DeLay goes over to the Marianas and says, you don't need a minimum wage here. And they say, okay, Congressman DeLay, we'll go along with you. No more minimum wage. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Lee in Texas on the line. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Sure. Man, I'm calling you from Sugarland, Texas. I was just wondering what we got to do to get
Tom,
down there.
Tom DeLay's district.
Yes, sir. I'm telling you, buddy, my whole family lives in Sugarland, and it's the biggest disgrace I think I've ever seen. Well, no, I can't say that, but it's bad. What do we got to do to get you on the air in Texas?
Well, you got to find a radio station. As you know, this is how commercial radio works, basically all over the country, is you find a radio station that's deciding that conservative talk radio isn't really the best thing for them. And that maybe they can make more money with liberal talk radio. And it ultimately comes down to money in the radio industry. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you can find advertisers who are willing to support progressive talk radio, and then you go to them and you say, hey, you know, there's some good programming out there. There's Air America, and there's also stuff that's not Air America. Jones has, you know, Stephanie Miller and Ed Schultz, and there's me and Alan Combs and some folks like Lionel. He's a little too libertarian for me. But people are putting together these lineups that are, you know, actually, in some cases, competing with Air America, which I think is a really good thing. There's now basically two tracts of progressive programming available, whereas, you know, 2 years
ago. Maybe Trent Lott was one of them. Made a trip over there and found some rather appalling conditions, and they held some hearings on it, and then I think they passed some type of resolution or whatever to alleviate the problem, and then, of course, it had to go to the House. And DeLay just killed it, remember, even being considered.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah. Welcome to Tom DeLay's ethics.
Well, here's the thing I don't understand about this guy, and I guess I don't understand his constituents, because like somebody once said, you know, if you think these guys are bad, you ought to see their constituents.
Right.
Well, Tom DeLay claims to be this devout Christian. In fact, they said when he used to be a party animal.
Rick, I'm not trying to hurry you, but we're just about out of time. If you want to make a point.
I guess my point is this. He made a statement one time. He says, you know, I'm a Christian, but I don't quite understand this loving your enemies business.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the central tenets of Christianity.
I know. He's a Christian who hasn't read the New Testament yet. Let's just put it that. Rick, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And thanks for listening to us there on WTKG in Grand Rapids. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. We'll be back with your calls and more after this break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're gonna break another heart. You're gonna tell another lie.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Matthew in Massachusetts with us. Hey, Matthew, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I was going to ask you. I heard you talking about the radio stations you're on and how to get you on Love, but I listen to you on Sirius, as I'm sure many of your listeners do.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard on the radio when I was listening to it that they're proposing, Sirius is proposing dumping the Air America channel. They have Sirius Left, which is what you were on.
Right.
And they have Air America, and I heard they were going to dump that. Do you know anything about that?
I really don't, and you'd have to call Sirius for that information. I mean, I've seen the stories in the press, but I just don't know. And broadly, what I say on the air, and I really stick to it, is that I don't discuss the programming of our affiliates, whether it's Sirius or whether it's one of the radio stations we're on or whether it's one of the web stations we're on, for that matter, because that's really their business. So, you know, it's not something I should be getting into. So, but Matthew, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Tom in Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, Tom? Hey, this morning I called Minnesota Public Radio. They were they were talking about Chief Justice Blackmun, and that's a New York Times reporter was promoting a book she wrote about Blackmun. And they brought up the topic of law clerks influencing justices' opinions, and I immediately thought of your We the People book and got on the phone and called in and plugged your book and quoted the part, of course, Santa Clara County versus
Southern Missouri Railroad, yeah.
Right, and mentioned the court reporters.
John Chandler, Bancroft Davis.
Yeah, so got the word out, and she, of course, she wasn't familiar with that case, and I said, well, go get the book We the People by Tom Hartman, and you'll learn all about it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we just got to keep, like I told you, I monitored NPR and keep hammering away, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then yesterday, you played an audio clip of a guy named Paul Weyrich. Is that his name?
Yeah, Paul Weyrich. Well, I've heard it pronounced Weyrich, and I've heard it pronounced Paul Weyrich. And, in fact, here it is right here, just for our listeners who missed it. Actually, I don't have time to play it. I'll have to play it after the break.
Because we have
10 seconds here.
Spell the name. I couldn't find it on Amazon.
Weyrich.
Weyrich.
Yeah, he's one of the big cheeses in
the. What's the name of book?
You know, I don't remember. It's something about the new media or something like that. I mean,
perfect to show how they don't believe in democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. In fact, that clip is such a classic. I will share that with you when we come back from this break because it's really something you need to hear. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where smart people get their news. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. No, really, seriously. We can talk about these things here, yes. Not the censorship on the Limbaugh show, no. Right here. We'll be back after this.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, the radical middle. They call us liberal. They call us progressive. I'll cop to those labels. But we're not out of the mainstream. We represent the views of the vast majority of Americans. Let's have Social Security. Let's have unemployment insurance. You want to call it socialism? I don't care. I think it's the best thing for America. If we have voted for it, if we have collectively decided that that's what we want to have, it's not socialism. It's democracy. Let's have Medicare. Let's have national health insurance. It's a good thing. It actually helps. It will help the economy. Why should American employers have to bear the cost of health care for the nation? It's nuts. You could make you could spin this as a conservative argument. Speaking of conservative arguments, in today's news, the Detroit News newspaper, Delphi, a company that manufactures parts for General Motors and some of the other auto manufacturers, Delphi, a major corporation, is now saying that if you take a sick day, now see, your contract says you can have a certain number of paid sick days, right? And there are some people who say, okay, you know, I've got 5 paid sick days a year and 5 vacation days a year, so I'm going to call in sick 5 days at the end of the year, you know, people use them up, right? Well, Delphi says, no. If you're going to take a sick day, you actually have to be sick. Well, a lot of companies have that policy. They require a note from the doctor. And, you know, some would say it's not unreasonable. Say you've got a company that you're working for, and you actually get 3 or 4 weeks of vacation a year. And the sick day policy is, hey, if you're sick, you know, there's a few days that we'll pay for, but after that you're on your own. Whatever. You know, some people go into the employment agreement knowing that if they're sick, they have to say, you know, I really am sick, and here's some proof. I've got a note from my doctor. But Delphi is now saying, if you take a sick day, you have to sign a form that allows Delphi Corporation to access your medical records. So if you get the flu and you want to be paid for that day that you're out, Delphi now gets to learn what you were doing 25 years ago when you were visiting your gynecologist or your psychiatrist. And what can they do with that information? Well, pretty much anything they damn well please. The pause is to let this sink in. Robert Betts, president of the UAW Local 2151. And I'm telling you, the unions are the last defense for labor in America. The last people standing between us and the cons who want to take us back to a feudal, F-E-U-D-A-L, society. A Bob Cratchit and Ebenezer Scrooge society where the employers have all the power and all the wealth and the workers are terrified, hungry, poor, and politically impotent. The unions are the only thing standing in the way, and the cons are doing their absolute best to destroy that last vestige of democracy in the workplace. Robert Betts, the president of the UAW Local 2151, says they're asking you to surrender your right to privacy through the waiver. We already have an agreement to account for part of this page is cut off, actually. As an acceptable excuse for absence, if I don't surrender, I may not. He goes on. Actually, it's here. I shouldn't start reading things when I haven't noticed that they're chopped off. Anyhow, privacy laws says somebody from Delphi. Delphi's Rubio. Where is Rubio here? Spokeswoman Luce Rubio. She says their privacy laws forbid the company from calling a doctor or hospital and asking for the information. So you have to give it to them, or you have to sign the papers so that they can get around the privacy laws. So what is this going to bring us to? It's going to bring us to a world where things happen like this little skit from the ACLU's website. This is actually a web movie, and in the web movie you can see the computer operator moving from screen to screen as she notices everything about the caller. But this is the world that between the Real ID Act, which was just amended to the emergency legislation to continue funding the war in Iraq, and the Halliburton Relief and Welfare Bill, between the Real ID Act and policies like this where corporations are now saying, if you want to take a sick day, you have to give us access to all of your medical records for your whole entire life. This is the brave new world we're heading toward.
Pizza Palace, guaranteed hot in 30 minutes or it's free. This is Mary. May I take your order?
Hi, Mary. Yes, I'd like to order.
This is Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
Thank you for calling again, sir. I share your national identification number as 610-204-9998-45-54610. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. I see you live at 736 Montrose Court, but you're calling from your cell phone. Are you at home?
I'm just leaving work, but I'm...
Oh, we can deliver to Bob's Auto Supply. That's at 175 Lincoln Avenue, yes?
No, I'm on my way home. How do you know all this stuff?
We just got wired into the system, sir.
Oh, well, I'd like to order a couple of your double meat special pizzas.
Sure thing. There'll be a new $20 charge for this.
Now she accesses his medical files.
Sir, the system shows me that your medical records indicate that you have high blood pressure and extremely high cholesterol. Luckily, we have a new agreement with your national health care provider that allows us to sell you double meat pies as long as you agree to waive all future claims of liability.
What?
Do you agree, sir? You can sign the form when we deliver, but there is a charge for processing. The total is $67 even.
$67?
Well, that includes the delivery surcharge of $15 to cover the added risk to our driver of traveling through an orange zone.
I live
orange
in an orange zone?
Now you do. Looks like there was another robbery on Montrose yesterday. You could save $48 if you ordered our special Sprout Submarine Combo and picked it up yourself. Comes with tofu sticks. Those are very tasty, sir. Good value, too.
But I want double meat.
Well, I'm sure you can afford the $67, then. You just bought those tickets to Hawaii. They weren't cheap, eh? Oh, but I see you checked out the budget beach bum at the library last week.
Broken system that is then leading to all these bizarre dislocations that further break the system. And it's just not right. It just isn't right. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hey, Tom, I want to explain to the people and to you, of course you're aware of it, what's wrong with the theocracy cult running the government of the United States.
First of all, I got to say, Armin, I don't think it's a theocracy cult. I think they are exploiting people of faith cynically.
Right.
I don't think these guys are religious for a minute.
Well,
it is a cult. If they are, it is a cult. To say that you can take the words of Jesus who said, you know, if you took out, what was the joke I heard the other day? I think it was Al Franken said it. If you took out all the words in the New Testament where Jesus, if you went in and clipped them out, where Jesus talked about caring for the poor, if you clipped all those words out, then you would have a Bible that would work really well as a box to smuggle Rush Limbaugh's drugs in.
Yeah, I see your point.
So anyhow, but as you were saying.
Well, like I said, it's a cult. But anyway, I want to explain how the Bush supporters that call themselves Christians are paying over $5 a gallon for gasoline, and they're paying over $5 a gallon for the gasoline, and they're not getting free health care. And at the same time, it looks like they're going to be paying for free health care for illegal people that are coming here, and like it or not, are eroding their economic leverage and wages.
Yeah, I think you mean $2 a gallon for gas, by the way. But the $5 is coming.
No.
I'll agree with you on that.
No.
Okay.
No, let me show you how I get there.
Well, okay, you got 20 seconds, Armin.
Okay, the gas is $2.25. The occupation illegal of Iraq is costing about $200 billion a year. You take $200 billion, you take half the people are working. Of the half the people working, 150 million, 100 million people are paying taxes in excess on income of $2,000. You split that out, and that works out to over $2.25 a gallon plus the $2.25 they're paying for the gas. See how it works?
Yeah, good one, Armin. Good one. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Good one. Well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, exposing the con in conservative. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Speaking of which, one of the folks in our chat room, Workplace Democracy in the chat room says, everything in Europe is slower and less chaotic than America, even the sex. So that's appropriate bumper music, I suppose, for that comment. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alice in Northern California on the line, one of our wise elders at 91 years of age. Hey, Alice, it's always wonderful to have you on the program.
Oh, good morning, Tom. Republicans have so many tricks and gimmicks. I believe one of their latest is to call talk shows, laying out a number of very real scandals in the Bush administration, and then claim claim to be God or the Pope. If they can sound like they are crazy, then they discredit the real scandals that they are speaking of.
Yeah, you're speaking of the fellow who called us earlier and said that Bush was up to 9/11, and by the way, I'm the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Alice, good point. Good point.
Okay.
Wouldn't surprise me. Thank you, Alice. Great to hear from you. Always wonderful to hear from you. Bye-bye. Victoria Jones with us. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, Tom.
I don't think you're the Messiah.
No. Well,
do you?
No, I was going to say in my dreams, and I realized I've never even had that kind of dream. I usually have a dream that I'm back at school, and I've got an exam, and I didn't resign.
There you go. I think that's kind of the last job that I'd want, frankly.
Oh, but, absolutely.
You know, when Jesus said, please take this cup from me, I could well understand it.
Yeah, and everybody ran away.
Yeah.
So there was a reason for that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not making fun of the story, but yeah.
No, it's a beautiful story, actually. But anyway, your call.
Being Wise Elders Day is very interesting. My father arrived from London yesterday, so.
Oh, marvelous.
He's 83 in a couple of weeks, and so I took him down to the Senate today to attend the Bolton hearing. the John Bolton hearing and also to zip into the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing where they're looking at one of these crackpot judges and to zip into appropriations to see what they're about to do with Amtrak. Mm. And so his head is buzzing, but he was going through Chairman Lugar's statement on Bolton as we sat in a cafe drinking Starbucks waiting to go back into the hearing, and he was going through it line by line, undermining every argument that Lugar was making. He doesn't even know the issues, but he was saying that's a false argument, that's tautology.
Sure.
So that was fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. And please tell your father how pleased we are to have his daughter on this program on a regular basis, and how well we do. So what else is happening in Washington? But the Bolton vote, has it happened yet? Have they passed him off to the Senate?
The Bolton vote is scheduled for 3 Eastern time. They scheduled themselves 5 hours of debate, so they're right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're being very careful with their time. They're being relatively civil. The most interesting thing that's happened so far is that Senator Voinovich of Ohio, who's now earned the phrase maverick, which I think is one step away from being called eccentric and then a loony, but right now he's just... the maverick.
Yeah, if you're a Republican anyway.
Right, exactly. He basically is saying that he's going to vote for him to go to the floor, but without a recommendation.
Hmm.
That's big.
Is it? Is it really? Is that
big? Yeah, because generally speaking, if they send somebody to the Senate floor, they send them with a recommendation to the Senate that, yeah, hey guys, you know, vote for this guy. They just, at this point, it looks like he's just going to get sent to the Senate floor with a, okay, here he is, whatever.
Yeah,
that's a big deal.
But the senators, I mean, the Republicans are so corrupt. I mean, they're just going to say, well, you know, so what? We're going to vote for him. He's Georgia's guy. He's Junior's guy. And Junior wants him, so Junior gets him.
Well, that's what Senator Coleman's just been saying. And he made what I thought was an extraordinary statement. I don't think he realized how stupid it sounded when he said it. He said that John Bolton is the best man that George Bush has put up for this job.
Well, that's the best thing that I've heard that's not as good as something that's worse.
Isn't that great? That was great. John Kerry made the interesting point that he said, look, folks, we're going to hear a whole load more stuff about this guy, and it's not going to be pretty. Do you really want to hear it on the Senate floor, or should we close it down here?
Yeah, well... There, as long as Bush is behind him, this administration absolutely rewards incompetence and loyalty. It's just like the mafia. You know, they don't like competence. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much, Victoria.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Say hi to your father for us. Tom Hartman here with you. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. There's some strange bumper music. Welcome back, my friends. 33 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. A telephone number calling from outside the United States. 503-248-0620. And Joe, speaking of which, outside the United States, in Paris, France, on the line. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. How's Paris?
It is, it's warming up. It's a little cloudy, but things are getting better. I was just back in the States, and it was cold and miserable, so it's nice to be back in France.
Okay, great. Yeah, as long as the Gulf Stream keeps flowing, right?
As long as it keeps going.
Yeah.
They can't stop that. The administration can't stop the Gulf Stream.
Well, actually, enough global warming, and they will.
That'll take a while, though.
Yeah, hopefully.
Want to talk about Bolton.
Okay. Yeah, they're debating him right now on the floor of the Senate.
I guess they are, and
not the floor, but in the committee.
As though he's going to get the job.
Well,
it looks pretty. I mean, Voinovich is now he's holding his nose and voting for him. Obviously, the man is temperamentally unqualified for the job. Everybody admits this, and I'm sure a lot of the Republicans who we haven't heard a peep from probably believe this as well. And what can you say?
Well, not only that, he's incompetent. I mean, you know, he not only yells and screams at people, he's temperamentally, you know, not appropriate, but the things that he has done have been he's screwed up. He's screwed up our relationship with North Korea. He's screwed up our relationship with Iran. He tried to get in the middle of the relationship with Libya, and Colin Powell had to get him out of there so that they could try and cut a deal with Libya because he kept.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's beyond just temperamentally screwed up. The guy is incompetent.
Yes, yes. But you know what I think at this point? It's evolved to this extent, and there's been so much discussion. I hope he gets the job. Frankly, I hope that
well,
he gets confirmed.
Well, that's because you live in Paris.
Excuse me?
That's because you have a place to live in Paris, France.
Well, that also helps. But I tell you something. The only way it seems that Democrats and progressive individuals from the United States can take back their own government, you know, as you quite often point out, is that the extremes of this administration be as evident as that. I don't see how he can make things any worse than they are. All that Bolton is going to do in this position is, which is a high profile job, so that when he antagonizes our allies and when he fragments the coalition of the willing to an even greater extent than it is already, that he's going to make it absolutely clear that this administration is so far out in left field that it does not represent people of the left, of the right, the middle right, of the center. It's going to show the extent to which the administration is a band of rogues.
You know, if it was a domestic position, I wouldn't disagree with you. Let him harm us, and we'll realize it, and we'll do something about it. But you're talking about putting him into the UN, where, for example, if he was to blow up at China over Taiwan or at Taiwan over China one day, the next day we could have a nuclear war. And a lot of people could die. You still there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. It just seems to me that at some point you have to say, yes, sometimes, you know, an alcoholic has to hit the bottom before they go to AA, and sometimes a country has to look into the face of the Great Depression before they say, hey, we really want FDR instead of Herbert Hoover. And at some point, we have to recognize the incompetence of our own guy. But frankly, I think at the UN, his incompetence will be less well recognized because, I mean, how often is the United States' UN ambassador on the news? Very rarely, even though he can do a lot of damage, and he's doing stuff every single day.
I have a feeling that this man is going to be on the news a lot because he's incapable of controlling himself, his words, his ideologies he wears on his sleeve. He's not going to be able to cover up what it is, but what he is. And it seems to me that at least here in France, and I suspect in the rest of Europe, people know what Bolton is about already. There's been so much about this, and French people anyway, they watch the news in the States. They're aware of the names of these people. I suspect that he's not going to be able to make any headway at all. He's got no diplomatic skills whatsoever, temperamentally, and I can't see how this is going to how he could have any sort of effect on international affairs. I would be willing to take the risk. I tell you frankly, Tom, I'd be willing to take the risk because I think it's good for our politics at home.
Yeah, well, you make a good point, and it's a point that I've made in the past talking about George Bush Jr., that a lot of Americans were absolutely horrified that he was elected, and I was saying, hey, if you'd gotten Gore and Lieberman, now I think Al Gore is a good guy, by and large, although he's a DLC Democrat, but Joe Lieberman I don't think is a good guy, and if you'd gotten Gore and Lieberman, I mean, this creeping incremental corporatism would have continued unabated. I think we'd be in a lot better position than we are as a nation right now. But the bottom line is that George W. Bush is blowing up the Republican Party.
Yeah.
He's blowing it up. And
good
I think,
for them.
And that's a good thing for America, ultimately.
Yeah. Lieberman, on the other hand, is a nice guy. And he's a congenial fellow. And somebody like that is a whole lot more dangerous in the long run than somebody like Bolton, who can't keep his mouth shut and is going to antagonize people from the moment he walks in the room. I think China, nuclear war, yeah, this is always a dangerous...
Well, not just China. I mean, India and Pakistan, it's, you know, Israel and the Middle East.
A lot of places, but I suspect that a good portion of the world and the diplomatic community worldwide understands what Bolton is about at this point, and as soon as he walks in the room, the red lights are going to flash in the minds of a lot of people. I can't imagine that he's going to be very effective in that way, except in putting his foot in it again and again.
Yeah, well, let's hope that you're right, Joe, and what we should do is we should have this conversation again in 6 months.
It may be like in a week or two.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. So, you know, give me a shout back, and once we see how he does, it's going to take him a month or so to get installed there anyway, even with it going to the Senate and everything. So.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. Okay. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear
Thank
from you
Tom.
There in France. And thanks for listening to the program.
No problem.
Which web stream are you picking it up on, by the way? Just
well, I try them all. They don't work. They don't work particularly well, unfortunately. Sometimes depends on the. As I was mentioning to your administrative person, I'm never sure if I'm actually listening to the archive program or the live program. Nothing has changed since you moved to Vermont. Since you moved from Vermont to Oregon, I suppose, but.
Well, White Rose Society runs the show continuously. They just repeat it over and over. RadioPower.org repeats it about every 6 hours. But today, for the first time in 2 years, literally, in going on 3 years of this program, today, the internet area, it's like a quarter of a state is out right now, is down in the area where our show originates, the web stream of it. So CRN.
That might be the problem.
Yeah, cable radio network. CRN Digital is the only web stream provider right now that's offering the show live. But the archives will be up on White Rose Society in a few hours. They're pulling it off CRN. So just as an FYI. Joe, thanks a lot for the call.
And thank you, Tom.
And, you know, carry on the good work. Keep spreading the good word and being a decent American abroad. We need more decent Americans abroad, please. Oh, my. I had promised I would play a Paul Weyrich clip, so let's just do it. Here's Paul Weyrich. In fact, I shared it with you yesterday, but somebody called in about it. This is the clip where the lead fundraising guy for the Republican Party, one of the biggest conservatives in America, he's speaking to a Christian congregation. He's speaking in a church about politics. That in and of itself ought to raise some flags for you, but nonetheless... Here's one of the leading fundraisers, the guy who wrote the book, literally, on right-wing Republican fundraising in the United States, the guy who claims that he helped bring Reagan to power, helped bring Bush Sr. to power, helped bring Bush Jr. to power, and helped create the entire right-wing internet machine, as it were, Paul Weyrich, or Ray Weyrich, or Weyrich, depending on how you say it. I've heard it a number of different ways. Can't recall how he says it. Weyrich. Here he is.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
In fact, quite candidly, our leverage in the elections goes up as the voting populace goes down. Somebody, Elijah in the chat room, he says it should be pronounced Weyrich. Maybe it is. Yeah, it sounds like a German name. It probably was Weyrich. Or Weyrich. Weyrich. Paul Weyrich. That sounds more legitimate, more genuine. Tom DeLay, tonight, Tom DeLay is being honored. 900 of his closest friends are paying $250 apiece to hang out with Tom DeLay tonight at the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. The $250 is going to pay entirely for the meal, they would have you think. So let's just review some of the things that might be said about Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay's dirty dozen, as it were. Tom DeLay, you know, what's Tom DeLay up to? What's he doing? In 1998, Tom DeLay, this, by the way, from the Center for American Progress. In 1998, Tom DeLay helped kill a congressional fact-finding trip that was being planned as part of an investigation of sweatshop conditions in the garment industry in the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands. Jack Abramoff represented the Northern Mariana Islands at the time, aiding them in their quest to avoid U.S. labor laws. To this end, Abramoff flew dozens of lawmakers and their aides for luxurious vacations in the balmy islands, including one 1997-98 New Year's trip for DeLay and his wife. It was on this trip that DeLay called Abramoff one of my closest and dearest friends. Later that year, Representative Peter Hoekstra, Republican of Michigan, decided to lead a fact-finding investigation into worker abuse in the island garment industry, When DeLay caught wind of the investigation, his office threatened Hoekstra with loss of his subcommittee chairmanship if he continued. Oh, it's about him breaking some rules. No, it's about him condoning, perpetuating, pushing for the continuation of essentially slave labor in the Mariana Islands. And it continues. DeLay raises corporate cash for Trimpac. DeLay is embroiled in a scandal in Texas and his active participation in illegally funneling corporate funds. See, it's against the law in Texas for corporations to give money to politicians or political action committees. Illegally funneling corporate funds to assist state political campaigns under DeLay's political action committee. This is called Texans for a Republican Majority, or TRIMPAC. They are under criminal investigation for using corporate money to finance Texas campaigns. DeLay has tried to distance himself from the group, but documents show DeLay, quote, personally forwarded at least one large check, end quote, to the group and was, quote, in direct contact with lobbyists for some of the nation's largest companies, end quote, on TRIMPAC's behalf. Number two. Number three, Tom DeLay bribes a congressman. DeLay has admitted to offering to endorse Senator Nick Smith, Republican from Michigan, to endorse his son Brad, who was running for Congress at the time, in exchange for Smith's yes vote on the Medicare bill. His actions violated House rules and earned DeLay a public admonishment from the Ethics Committee. Oh, bribery, you don't go to jail for bribery if you're Tom DeLay. You just get admonished. Smith originally alleged, and then retracted under pressure from House leaders, that DeLay also offered a $100,000 bribe for his vote. DeLay extended the roll call on the Medicare bill for nearly 3 hours in order to avoid an embarrassing loss. And I tell you, Bernie Sanders is still cooked about that thing. It's supposed to be 15 minutes for a vote. And in the history of the House of Representatives, before these cons came along, it had never been extended. You take your vote. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. But now, if the Democrats win, the vote is over in 15 minutes. If the Democrats lose, the vote is over in 15 minutes. If the Republicans lose, we keep the vote open and keep taking it over and over and over again until the Republicans finally win. While Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay are running around the floor of the House, you know, drumming up votes. Hey, you better vote for this, and I'll give you $100,000, and your son's going to be toast if he doesn't even... Quack, 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 quack. DeLay uses taxpayer money for partisan stunt. Yes, you heard it right. Stunt. The House Ethics Panel rebuked DeLay for using government resources to help locate a private plane he thought was carrying Texas Democratic legislators. DeLay was trying to force the legislators back to the Capitol so he could push through his bitterly disputed congressional redistricting. The ethics report cited House rules that bar members from taking any official action on the basis of the partisan affiliation of the individuals involved, and said DeLay's behavior raised, and I quote, serious concerns under such standards of conduct, end quote. So, you know, a few little problems Tom DeLay had. How about another one? Tom DeLay pays for golf tournaments with cash meant for kids. DeLay used a children's charity, Celebrations for Children Incorporated, as a cover for collecting soft money from anonymous interest groups, some of which was used for dinners, a golf tournament, a rock concert, Broadway tickets, and other fundraising events at the Republican convention in New York. Because the money was supposedly for charity, companies wishing to curry favor with DeLay were able to do so without revealing themselves as campaign donors. I would add they got tax exemptions for it. Federal laws governing tax-exempt charities allow no more than an insubstantial portion of a group's revenue to be spent on activities other than the charity's main stated purpose. So he broke the law, he broke the House rules, and he caused a charity to become corrupted. Right. Marion Delgado in our chat room, she says, Michael Savage could be our ambassador. He could do better than John Bolton, I'll tell you. By the way, his real name is Michael Wiener, just so you know. DeLay promises, I don't use a pseudonym. Michael Wiener does.
Wouldn't you if you were going to go on the air as a talk radio host and your name was Michael Wiener? Or is it Weiner?
No, it's Wiener, I'm pretty sure. I would change that from Wiener Weiner to something. And Michael did. It's just good business. DeLay promises a seat at the table for donors. In one of its three public rebukes, the House Ethics Committee cited the belief on the part of executives at an energy company, Westar Energy, Inc., that a $56,500 contribution to DeLay would get them a seat on the table where key energy legislation was being drafted. DeLay also participated in Westar's golf fundraiser at the Homestead Resort in summer 2002, quote, just as the House-Senate conference on major energy legislation was about to get underway. Ain't it sweet? After this, we'll have an O'Reilly alert for you. More of the weirdness of the Reich today coming up.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you.
Now, behind enemy lines.
Ah, yes. Bill O'Reilly lashes out at Don Cheadle. He says, I just don't get this. Bill O'Reilly, he says, this guy Don Cheadle, we invited him to talk about Darfur. He had a headache. His elbow hurt. He didn't do it, you know. He couldn't do it. As you said, he's got a movie out now, so he's running around. I think Cheadle's a phony, and as you know, I just don't want these stars to be getting all this good publicity using people. Yeah, like using the starving people in Darfur. Don Cheadle's actually running around talking about Darfur. Bill O'Reilly, this was the second time in the history of his show he's mentioned the word. Similarly, Angelina Jolie is running around the world being the UN ambassador to third world countries on behalf of children and refugees, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. She's their goodwill ambassador, and she's actually been doing it, and doing quite a good job of it, raising the profile of this agency, helping them raise money, helping them help refugees around the world. And she said to Bill O'Reilly, no, don't want to be on your show. So he goes, now, we have invited Ms. Jolie on this program six times over the course of 2 and 2.5 years, and she's had this UN position, and she doesn't come on. In fact, she does very, very little publicize what she's doing in the U.S. here in the United States. She's done a couple of MTV interviews, which is like doing nothing. She's done an ABC morning show that nobody watches on the weekend. that ABC morning show is called Good Morning America. And it pulled over 3 million viewers, well over 1 million more than O'Reilly gets. But, you know, what can you say? He's got to be able to say, hey, she won't come on my program, therefore she's not so important. Yeah, what's happening is that people are realizing that going on Bill O'Reilly's program is like visiting a toxic waste dump. They're just not up for it anymore. Thank you very much. They're just not willing to do it. Who would want to subject themselves to that? It's like, oh, let's go swimming in the Superfund site. I don't think so. Good on you, Angelina Jolie and Don Cheadle. Good on you both. Yes, yes. similar to our local talk show host here in Portland, Heidi says. Yes, indeed. The O'Reilly factor rolls on toward the cliff. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where smart people get their news. We'll be back after this news at the top of the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us. Yes, all the rest of us. Even the cons who listen. You're welcome to call in. Seriously, try it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you.
telling the truth that multinational corporations would really rather that you weren't all that familiar with, you know what I mean? Not to mention the Bush crime family and the cons in Congress and so forth. Boy, my friend Stanley is smiling. Back years ago, I knew a fellow by the name of, I'm not going to give you his last name, but a friend of mine, Stanley, lived out in L.A., and he owned a company, and this was 30 years ago. He had this little tiny company, and he was selling drug testing kits. And basically, he was selling them, he was advertising in High Times magazine. And he was selling these things basically to people who smoked pot, who wanted to find out how strong the pot was that they were smoking, right? And then the government got into the act and started mandating drug testing for truckers and, you know, pilots and things like that. And Stanley got in, and he said, I remember how pleased he was by this, because he said, hey, you know, these things cost, there's like 5 or 10 cents worth of chemicals in one of these things. And he was selling them, you know, online or through the mail in High Times for like, you know, $10 or $15. He says, you know, he can sell them for $30 to big companies in the government, $30, $35 for 5 or 10 cents worth of chemicals. And Stanley became a millionaire in the 1970s. And then he got bought out by one of these big corporations, one of the big companies that's got connections into the prison, the private prison industry and the security industry and all that kind of stuff. And now they're selling drug testing kits for $20, $30, $40 a whack. And here we see this here in Oregon, the local story. The White House deputy drug czar offers $10 million in federal grants for programs to test kids in schools at a regional meeting held in Clackamas. And, of course, that $10 million is going to go to private corporations who are making the drug tests very profitably. Thank you very much. Marianne Solberg, deputy director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, spoke to about 60 Northwest school officials and nonprofit groups in Clackamas. It was one of four summits being held throughout the nation this spring to discuss student drug testing, a central part of President Bush Jr.'s national transfer money from taxpayers to big corporations, national drug control strategy. Many students from New Jersey to Texas, many schools from New Jersey to Texas pay huge amounts of money to large corporations to buy tests to test students. But student school drug testing has not caught on in Oregon, a state that has been a legal battleground for the ethical questions raised by this practice. This is grim. Prohibition doesn't work. Heidi, this has got to be a show. This has got to be for the local show tomorrow. This is a great story. We'll get into that. Anyhow, World War II comments blasted. Did you catch this? This is a genuine nutcase alert. I mean, not quite the classic. This is not a Horsley alert. And although one of the folks in our chat room did point out that the Mexican mule, the donkeys in Mexico, are so declining in numbers they're having to import them from the United States. Yeah, especially if you're Neil Horsley. Spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside. That the guy who would tell you that here's where you go to murder abortion doctors, the guy who would tell women what they can do with their bodies. In any case, now this is another kind of nutcase alert. We've done that one to death. In the inflammatory worldview of Pat Buchanan, no, he said, he has been there before. Foxman said this. Pat Buchanan in the past has challenged whether or not there were crematoria. Veterans were also insulted via W spokesman John Newberry says, this is more or less saying they fought for the wrong reasons and their sacrifice was futile. Buchanan apparently hasn't given much thought to what the world would have looked like if Hitler and his henchmen would have succeeded. Well, Mr. Newberry, actually Buchanan has given considerable thought to it, and he rather likes the way the world would look if Hitler and his henchmen had succeeded. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Pretty straightforward. Gareth, you remember seeing Pat Buchanan? You remember? Yep.
Yeah.
Your microphone is hot, which is fine. What was your impression of his speech? Is he a Nazi?
Yeah, it was a little bit scary.
Yeah, it was very scary. I remember you were really amazed. This was years ago. We took our kids to see Pat Buchanan speaking in Atlanta. And I said, hey, if Adolf Hitler were rising and we lived in Germany in 1930, I would want my kids to know what this guy is all about. And so, you know, with that explanation, we took our kids down to see Pat Buchanan. And he got up there on the stage and he just ranted and raved about those people, all the code words that Buchanan was using for Jews. And, you know, the international conspiracy and those people this and those people that. Yeah, I see you're nodding your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the one guy had the sign. What did the sign say? The liberals are sweating.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I do remember that because it was really hot in there.
That's right. And you said, you turned to us and you said, I'm sweating. It was great. So thank you, Gareth, for sharing with us. Gareth was a little kid at the time. She's a grown-up now. Anyhow, Abraham Foxman says, no, we're not going to put up with this. Former Mayor Ed Koch offered this blunt rebuttal. He says, I believe that no decent human being should ever sit down at the same table with Pat Buchanan. I'm shocked that otherwise responsible, respectable citizens share platforms with him on Sunday shows. It'll be interesting to see how this affects Mr. Buchanan's career. Very interesting to see. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call in. TomHartman.com gets you to our live chat room. Just click live chat. You can drop in there and say hi. Dave in Humboldt County's on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
You ever seen Pat Buchanan live?
Oh, no, I haven't. Never.
I got to tell you, Dave, it's a trip. It's a trip.
He turns into something different than he is on
the
TV.
He really and truly does. He becomes a fire and brimstone preacher and a demagogue. I've been there and I've seen it. And you heard the testimony of somebody else as well. Yeah. Anyhow, what are you calling about, Dave?
It occurred to me towards the end of the last hour that Tom DeLay, the hammer there, is very much reflective of what the neocons today are all about. So much exploitation, deceit, and greed and all. You laid out a lot of the nice things he could say about him at the celebration. But I only went
through half the list, by the way, Dave.
Well, the one that I think is the most unforgivable is that he's kind of single-handedly the guy that's still got these voting machines made non-verifiable. He blocks those efforts.
You're right.
If nothing else for that, I think he should be taken away in handcuffs.
Although Denny Hastert is the guy who actually has the power to, you know, I mean, he's the Speaker of the House. He's the guy who theoretically runs the show.
Yeah, and first in the Senate.
Yeah, and so I think we have to hold them accountable as well. So, good point, Dave. Good point. Thanks a lot for calling and raising that point. Let us never forget the voting machines. Never forget those murdered during World War II, although Pat Buchanan would like you to. And never forget the voting machines. Pat Buchanan, on Don Imus' show, he says, why destroy Hitler? And why venerate FDR and Churchill? Say, what? Is this like a calculated self-destruction move, or is Pat Buchanan not getting enough publicity and he feels like he needs... I know what it is! I've got it! Heidi, I figured it out. Pat Buchanan is going to be running for president. You think?
Been there, done that.
Yeah, but he's going to do it again, do you think?
You do?
Yeah.
What makes him think that they can get anywhere?
Well, he came out today, apparently it was today, on Don Imus' show, and says...
On Imus?
Yeah, he says, why destroy Hitler, and why venerate FDR and Churchill? What's the big deal? You know, why did we get into World War II? Pat Buchanan.
He didn't.
He did.
He said it and meant it?
He did. He said it and meant it. He said, because Germans voted Hitler in, they did not need to be liberated, and Britain and France drew Germany into a wider conflict. Yes, by being attacked!
Good heavens! Is he just? He's just a pure isolationist.
Yeah, to say the least. And he's a Nazi.
And
I think that now, given how far to the right, or the Reich, the Republican Party has moved. This is what you have to do to get to be a serious contender for the Republican Party now.
Man. And go ahead. I say go ahead.
You got Bill
Fragment.
You got Bill Frist saying, hey, bring the Bible in here. Let's turn this nation into a giant church and only one religion allowed, please.
And you can, and you better vote our way.
There you go. We're speaking, by the way, with Heidi Tauber, who is my co-host on the morning program on KPOJ in Portland, Oregon, who just happens to be in the studio catching up on some work today. Thank you, Heidi.
You're welcome.
We will carry on tomorrow. Yes, Pat Buchanan, General Madness, General Insanity. Florida. Now, to add to that, here, you've got Nazis running around as commentators on talk shows. And, you know, surprise, surprise. And now, at the Orlando International Airport, if you want to go through the airport, you have to submit your eyeball. Your eyeball! We want to see your eyeball, says the folks in the Orlando Airport. People at Orlando International Airport will have both irises scanned at special computers to determine their identity. This, no doubt, in anticipation of the Real ID Act, where they can then encode that data in the RFID chip that they put on your driver's license, so that when you walk within 100 feet of, actually, I'm sure that they're increasing the range now, probably when you walk within a half a mile of a detector set up by the police or Homeland Security or the FBI or the commissars, they will know who you are and what your retinal scan looks like. We know who you are. We know where you are. Yeah. So, you want to fly? You want to pass through the airport in Orlando? Give us your eyeball. We just, you know, just like we did with the airplanes, with the cockpit doors and air marshals and all that kind of stuff, says the Federal Security Director, Art Minkey, it's just another step to try and figure out what we can do better. Yeah. 20 minutes past the
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Mama, it's hard to hide, cause you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short. I just slip on a burka, head on down to Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court.
It's the Osama song. Welcome back, my friends. That from Jim Turr, BlueCanyonSatire.com, BlueCanyonProductions.com. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program today. Eric in Orangeburg, South Carolina, on the line. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Eric?
I'm not hearing you over the internet, but there's a progressive co-op like group that would like to be affiliated with you. They're pushing the sale, direct sale of family farmers who grow organic and regular crops.
Yeah, well, that's great, Eric. I'm going to put you on hold, and you can give information to Kareth about, you know, them as being potential guests or whatever, you know, they would like. You know, I think that's great work, and I'm all in favor of publicizing it. So, and I'm not Heidi. Let you know the guy on line one there picked that up. 209 members vote to slash Medicaid and fund pork. 2 weeks ago, 214 House members voted to approve a federal budget that slashes Medicaid by $10 billion. And then they vote to spend $25 million on a bridge to nowhere, connecting two South Carolina towns with a combined population of 2,000, to $3 million for the National Packard Museum in Warren, Ohio. Yeah. And $95 million to widen a highway in Sheboygan and Fond du Lac counties in Wisconsin, a widening that the State Department of Transportation says is not necessary. Not necessary. Very strange. Larry Korb is with us. Larry Korb to discuss the Bolton nomination. Hey, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm scrambling here. We I lost the piece of paper. Ah, senior fellow of the Center for American Progress, senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, commentator and author of multiple books on U.S. policies. And, sorry, we're just a wee bit disorganized here this afternoon. George Bush is pushing to have John Bolton in the U.N. We had a caller earlier from Paris, France, saying, literally from Paris, France, saying, fine, you know, it'll show the whole world what a nutcase Junior is. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it certainly is not going to help our standing around the world or in the United Nations. I mean, if you look at the opinion polls, the United States is not well thought of around the world, and it will also undermine the efforts that the President and Secretary of State Rice made earlier this year to sort of rebuild the bridges. So it's going to undo a lot of the good that they themselves have done.
Yeah, and do you think that this is actually going to get through, that he's going to be voted in?
Well, I think the chances are less and less the longer it goes and the more defections you have. I mean, now, if it is reported without a recommendation to the floor, there are 55 Republicans would have to vote to approve it.
Only 50 would have to vote to approve it, right?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, only 50. You got 55 Republicans, but you know that Hagel and Voinovich aren't going to vote, and probably Chafee, so at least you got three right there that may not vote to approve it.
And Olympia Snow.
Yeah, so, I mean, you could end up in Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, what I would say, my kind of Republicans, you know, mm-hmm. the Eisenhower, Rockefeller Republican types may not, you know, vote to approve it.
Right, and but that takes us down by five, if I'm counting right, which makes it 50-50.
Cheney could cast a decisive vote. Yeah, that's
right.
True. Yeah, but I mean, there may be more. You know, I mean, if you take a look at it based upon what Voinovich said, and you know what has come out since you know the nomination was first made.
Do you think, Larry Korb, that this might be the sort of thing that folks like, for example, John McCain, who may still have presidential ambitions, how he votes on the Bolton nomination might be the sort of thing that he's waking, you know, staying up nights worrying about?
Well, I do think it will have an impact on what we call the Republican base, which is becoming more and more hardline, if you will. Ben Bolton is a hero to many of those people for his statements about how useless the UN is and how, you know, useless international treaties are.
Well said. Larry, can you hold on for just a minute? We've got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a moment with Larry Korb. This is Tom Hartman here with you, 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire, no passes required from the RNC. Welcome back. We're talking with Larry Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, commentator and author of multiple books on U.S. policies, about the impact of John Bolton on the United States and the United Nations. Larry, what do you think is actually going to happen if John Bolton gets into the U.N.? I mean, how is this going to play out? Do you think that maybe they all already have their antenna up, that everybody in the world knows this guy's a nutcase and a loose cannon, and they'll just largely ignore him? Or do you think he could do some real damage?
Well, I think he could do some damage because given the way he's handled himself in his, you know, 20 years on and off in the government service, it's going to be difficult for him to persuade other members of the Security Council to support us on issues like North Korea and Iran. We know that when he was involved in negotiations, for example, over Iran with the Europeans, the European Foreign Secretary, Jack Straw, had asked Powell to take him off the negotiations because he was causing more problems. You know, he has talked about, you know, we should recognize Taiwan. How do you think that's going to go over when you try and persuade the Chinese to support us? And remember, the Chinese have a veto on the Security Council.
He's on record as saying that we should.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, when he went up before the confirmation, they pulled out everything he had written. He said, well, I didn't mean it. Well, you know, I've been through confirmation. People check what I've written, and you, if you deny it, then you, what kind of person are you when you're in the think tank world? You're supposed to be telling the truth to power.
Yeah, yeah. So was it like 20 years ago that he said we should acknowledge Taiwan?
Oh, no, no. This is all in the 90s during the Clinton administration. In fact, he denied it, some of the stuff he had said, and then Senator Boxer from California played the tape.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. So what can we do to try and mitigate the damage of this, and what can we do in, over the short term to try and encourage the Senate not to nominate this
well,
guy?
Well, I think you
need
to
confirm this guy.
Tell your senators to vote their conscience, not, you know, yield to political pressure from the White House, because I think Republicans and Democrats all know in their heart of hearts that he is certainly not the best person we could have. And it's not just that you don't want a conservative up there. There are plenty of conservatives that the president could send up. This is his third U.N. ambassador. The first two were terrific.
Terrific?
Yeah, I think that John Negroponte and Senator Danforth did a great job in the U.N.
In the U.N. I have a lot of concerns about John Negroponte in general, you know. John.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a different issue. I mean, John did a fine job in the United Nations when he, you know, when he was our representative there.
He basically kept his head down.
Well, no, but, I mean, he was able to work with other nations, for example, to get amendments to, you know, dry up the financial assets of the terrorists. And, you know, we did get that 15-0 vote to get the inspectors back into, you know, into Iraq. I mean, I think he did a good job. And I think Senator Danforth was very instrumental in getting the United States at least to say something about the horrible events in Darfur.
Yeah, well, John Danforth has always been a stand-up guy, even though his policies are relatively to the right. He's a
so what I'm saying is you can have, if you're, you know, want a conservative, if you're up to me, I'd send Colin Powell up there. That would send the right signal to the U.N. and to the world.
Yeah, although the Bush administration is so good about punishing people who stray from the line, and Colin Powell has not been absolutely singing their song. And in fact, one of the stories that I've heard is that Michael Powell leaving the FCC was payback to Colin Powell for not being quite loyal enough.
Well, I hope that's not true. But, you know, one of the interesting things, I was debating out in Ohio State the other night about the Bolton thing,
mm-hmm.
and basically, you know, look at you always when you hire someone, you go to their last employer, Colin, last boss. You say, what kind of person is this?
Right.
Powell hasn't endorsed him.
Yeah, I know. He's the only major administration official who hasn't, though.
Right.
I mean, right.
He was his boss, though.
Yeah, but what does this say about George Bush Jr.? If this guy, and I call him Jr. because I know the word is that, as Maureen Dowd pointed out, he hates to be called Jr. He's got a problem with his father, I guess.
Yes.
In any case, Bush is coming out saying, this is my man, this is the kind of person that we want there, this is the face that we want to have in the United Nations. He represents our worldview. He's the type, you know, all the right-wing talk shows are running around going, we just need a tough guy in the U.N., and he's a tough guy. See, all this is proof that he's a tough guy. If this really is a reflection of Bush, what does that say?
Well, it says he doesn't really care about the U.N. And the other thing is, look, Bolton wanted to be Condi Rice's deputy, number two. And basically, this Foreign Relations Committee, Lugar, let them know he would not get confirmed for that job. So Bush wanted to reward him just as he rewarded all those people who messed things up with Iraq with Medals of Freedom. And, you know, sending Wolfowitz, who completely boggled the whole invasion of Iraq, and sent him to the World Bank. This is a reward for loyalty. He values loyalty. That's the key thing. And all these other things are just, you know, rationalizations to support, you know, something that the president wanted to do for other reasons.
Speaking of loyalty, I mean, we had the worst intelligence failure in the history of the United States, arguably worse than Pearl Harbor on 9/11, where we had over 50 memos coming through the White House, you know, with the folks with their hair on fire, you know, to quote Dick Clark, saying that these guys are trying to hijack airplanes, they're looking at high-profile buildings, they're looking at East Coast cities. George W. gets his memo on August 6th, says, you know, Bin Laden determined strike inside the U.S., so he takes the longest vacation in presidential history, and even then he's afraid to go back to Washington, D.C., goes to Florida to hang out with his brother, who puts the state on high alert. And this incredible intelligence failure. I've talked with Sandy Berger. He talks about, you know, how he handed off the, you know, all this information to Condi Rice, and she did nothing with it, essentially.
I know. Yeah.
And so they have raised now the most incompetent people. Cheney, who was supposed to be in charge of the counterterrorism task force, and Condi Rice, who was in charge of national security for the United States. She's gotten a promotion, and Cheney runs for vice president again. Isn't this administration operating less like a corporation, which at least in theory rewards competence, and more like a mafia family?
Well, I mean, I thought Voinovich put it well this morning. Senator Voinovich, he said if this was a corporation, Bolton would have been fired when he was in the State Department. That's
right. But if this was the Gotti family, he would be promoted.
Well, I mean,
because he's a good soldier.
There's no doubt about the fact that loyalty trumps competence in this administration. The only person who was right about Iraq was Colin Powell, and he got dumped. Yeah. I mean, Rumsfeld presided over the worst, you know, post-invasion plan we've ever seen. And he's still there. And according to the interview gave to the New York Times yesterday, he ain't planning on leaving.
Yeah, yeah. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, Larry Korb, it's out and about right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the fate of this is going to be? We really haven't been complying with it all these years anyway, have we?
Well, I mean, the United States has violated the spirit of it, you know, particularly now as they want to develop new nuclear weapons. The fact that the treaty we have with the Russians, the so-called Moscow Treaty, says we take the weapons off alert, but we don't get rid of them.
Right, which violates Article 6, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so, you know, we haven't been really following the spirit of the treaty, and other nations know that. And so they're saying to us, you follow the spirit of it. We're saying, no, let's not even talk about that. Let's talk about North Korea and Iran. So we need to do both. But, you know, we have to, you know, carry out our part of the bargain as well. And fortunately, it was Republicans from Congress, a congressman from Ohio by the name of Hobson, who stopped, you know, them developing the new nuclear weapons last year.
Yeah. Although they're still hell-bent for leather to make this happen.
Oh, yeah, they got it back in the budget again this year. I mean, and it's amazing. Kurt Weldon from Pennsylvania and Hobson, they're very conservative guys, basically are saying, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. What are they doing?
Well, I mean,
are they trying to bring about the end times that they talk? I mean, what's the deal?
Well, I mean, basically they have a new doctrine of, you know, waging preventive wars, and they would not be, adverse to using nuclear weapons in them. That's their doctrine.
But the last guy who had, the last major player on the world stage who had a doctrine of preventative war, preemptive preventative war, was Hitler. He used it against Poland. That was his excuse to invade Poland. And look where it got him. I mean, how can these guys think that this is a rational foreign policy?
Well, the president thinks he got a mandate from the election. And he said, I told you what my policies were. I got reelected, and so therefore, you know, I'm going to keep doing them, if anything, even more boldly.
Yeah, it's a tragedy for the United States. Larry Korb, thanks so much for being with
us. Sure thing, Tom, anytime.
Thank you. Senior fellow of the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you'd like more information and to see what Larry's up to. Thanks so much for being with us, Larry. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Boy, where was the Wall Street Journal when Republicans were blocking Clinton nominees? Well, this from Media Matters for America. Again, another conservative alert, as it were. The Wall Street Journal columnist John Fund claimed that he and the Journal editorial page criticized Republican efforts to block former President Bill Clinton's judicial nominee. You get this, John Fund, you know, the guy who's always on the TV shows because he's a conservative. You don't see liberals on the TV shows. Occasionally they'll drop Maureen Dowd in once a month, right? Just so they can say, oh, we had a liberal on once, back there in February 2nd, in fact. I think we had a liberal on. John Fund, he's all over the place. And he goes on TV here. And, which program? Hardball with Chris Matthews. He goes on Hardball with Chris Matthews, as he is wont to do. He's so often on there. And, of course, this is MSNBC. You've heard, if you've listened to this program regularly, we talked with Phil Donahue's former producer, who made the point that that the operating rules at MSNBC at that time, when Phil Donahue was on the air, were, if you have a liberal on, you must have at least two conservatives on to balance them. And if it's a strong liberal or a competent liberal like Amy Goodman or Michael Moore, you have to have three conservatives on. If you have no liberals on, you can have one conservative. MSNBC, of course, owned by in large part General Electric, one of the world's largest defense contractors. So John Fund goes on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. And he says, oh, back then when the Republicans were obstructing the Clinton nominees, you'll keep in mind, 35% of the judicial nominees that Bill Clinton sent to the Senate never made it to a vote. 35%. Only 5% of the Bush judicial nominees that have been sent to the Senate have failed to get a vote or been rejected. 35% of Clinton's. And so Chris Matthews points this out, and John Fund says, oh, we at the Wall Street Journal, we editorialized against that. We didn't think the Republicans should be doing that back then during the Clinton years. So Media Matters goes back and looks at the record. Dangerous thing. Turns out then Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, actually criticized the Senate for allowing the... Let me start that again. The Wall Street Journal actually criticized Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican of Utah, for allowing Paez's nomination, Richard Paez, one of Clinton's nominees who was filibustered, to go to the full Senate. Several other journal editorials also explicitly defended the Republicans' right to deny Clinton nominees an up or down vote. What happened to what's good for the goose is good for the gander? No. The Republicans are all about, hey, if we don't get our way, we'll change the rules. That's what they're saying. If they don't get their way, they're going to change the rules. Very simple. Very straightforward. It's just like Tom DeLay did when the Medicare vote came and they didn't have enough votes to pass Medicare because of the abomination in it, this drug thing where if the government is going to be paying for drugs, then they can't negotiate with the drug companies. They are forbidden from law, by law, from negotiating with the drug company. They have to pay full retail. A $300 billion profit windfall for the pharmaceutical industry, more or less. There weren't enough votes for it because there were enough Republicans of conscience saying, no, I don't think so. This stinks. And so you get Tom DeLay down there talking to Representative Nick Smith of Michigan and saying, hey, I know you're going to retire and your son wants to run, your son Brad Smith wants to run for your seat, and he's a good shot to take it. And if you vote for this Medicare bill, then we will help your son, we'll give him $100,000, and if you vote against it, your son will never be in Congress. And Nick Smith not only voted against it, a Republican with some integrity, not only voted against it, but then he went back to Michigan and went on a talk show and he told the story of Tom DeLay offering him the bribe and the threat. For this, was DeLay arrested for bribery? No, he was admonished. He was admonished by the House Ethics Committee. So anyhow, with this outrageous bill, this is just is more of the back to Hardball with Chris Matthews here. MSNBC, Chris Matthews talking to John Fund. John Fund saying, no, we never editorialized against that. He says, I personally wrote the editorial saying Paez deserved a vote. I know other members wrote others. No, he didn't. Now, the Republican strategy, when the rules work for us, we're all in favor of the rules. When the rules work against us, as in the case of the Medicare bill, you know, where DeLay held the vote open for 3 hours instead of the 15 minutes it has been for the last 230 years, then we change the rules. Just change the rules. That's all it takes. And then go on national TV and tell lies about it. It's the Republican way. And a few conservative Democrats like Zell Miller, but, you know, by and large, it's the Republican way. This is, you know, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you have to look at this, or an independent, or a green, or a progressive, or a libertarian, or whatever. You have to look at this and say, you know, this Republican Party has become so corrupt and is doing so much damage to the United States that we really shouldn't be supporting it anymore in any way at all. It's not a legitimate organization any longer. 10 minutes before the hour. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what... Representatives David Obey and John Dingell, Democrats of Wisconsin and Michigan, respectively, called for an investigation into reports that the Republican chairman of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is pushing for political control over public broadcasting. The Republicans on PBS may be illegal. Obey is the ranking member of the House Committee on Appropriations. Dingell is the ranking member of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. They've asked that Kenneth Kahns, the Inspector General for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, investigate whether they're violating the law, the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967, also known as the PBA, which prohibits interference by federal officials over the content and distribution of public programming and forbids, quote, political or other tests, end quote, from being used in CPB hiring decisions. Obey and Dingell asked that the CPB Inspector General investigate a consulting contract that, according to the New York Times, was initiated by Kenneth Tomlinson, formerly of the Reader's Digest, lifelong and childhood friend of Karl Rove, to review the Now with Bill Moyers television show for political content. He's now also hired two ombudsmen to review public programming and is trying to get Kathleen Cox, you know, removed, Kathleen Cox, president of CPB. He's trying to get one of his right-wing buddies in there. Corporation for Public Broadcasting is actually forbidden by law from producing programming. They're just supposed to act as a conduit. But this guy, he's determined to get his finger in there and destroy CPB.